All right, we are here. Welcome, welcome. We speak of inner voices. Every one of you, since you've been very, very small, has been thinking all day long. Now, when you were small, if you had paid attention, you would have been able to stop the flow of talk in your mind, the thoughts rambling through, the evaluations, the attitudes, the orientations, the choices, decisions, the interests, the desires, the imagination, all of that going through your mind over and over all day long. As a child, you could have stopped it. And some of you actually did. The one who channels us remembers that when she was about 4 or 5, she says, what if I can just stop thinking? She thought that would be kind of fun, kind of unusual. And she was able to stop thinking for a whole minute or two. No, I think I want to think some now again. When she was about 8 or 9, she says, I think I'd like to stop thinking for a while. She got about 3 seconds, and she says, nope, I can't do it. Ideas are still coming. Now, if you pay attention within your mind, you'll find it's really, really difficult to achieve a few seconds of silence, true silence, because there are several levels of voices. We're not talking about voices from outside of you. We're not talking about possession, demons, all that kind of scary kind of Hollywood-enhanced stuff. We're not talking about mental illness, the voices of schizophrenia. We're just talking about ordinary mind talk all day long. Commentary on your life. If you pay attention to it, and some of you have, you'll notice how repetitive it is. You go over the same thoughts, the same feelings. You have the same attitudes about things, the same judgments, the same perspectives. And you just go running through them every day. If you have a story that you're obsessed with, that you're absorbed in, for example, if you're ill, or if you're having a real deep problem that you're addressing, that can take up most of your day. Repetitive mulling on thinking, on feeling it over and over and over again, as if by the repetition and by the sheer amount of attention that you give to it, some kind of revelation could possibly appear and you could possibly get an insight or a thought about how to get out of it or how to heal it or how or what to do about it. But unfortunately, that's not the way mind talk works. In the East, so much of the spiritual path has been about quieting the mind. It is well recognized there that all the talk that you do during your day is the same thing as repeating a mantra. In the East, you repeat a mantra of charged, powerful, spiritually oriented words, or something that actually may not make a heck of a lot of sense, but it focuses your mind away from the mind talk. However, in the West, people don't practice that so much. The mind talk runs amok. The East calls that monkey mind. Because if you've ever been around monkeys, they never sit still. They're always into mischief. They're always opportunists. See a little space, they'll jump in there and grab something. In a sense, your mind does the same thing. It pays attention to all the things going on. And if there's an opportunity to grab onto something, to grab onto a thought and to chew on it a while, monkey mind will do it. If you have a desire or a fascination with anything, monkey mind will want to attach to it and dwell on it and go all around about it if you've done it more than once on any particular item or thing that you've desired, you'll notice it's the same stuff. It's just an attachment to thinking, an attachment to this busy activity, this mundane, consistent talk. It is just as hard in the West as in the East to calm and quiet the mind. In the East, there are people who meditate for years and years and years, and they can achieve a quieter mind than someone who does not practice a mental discipline in the West. But still, it talks. The mind talks. It runs and rambles. It thinks about what you're going to do next. It thinks about your next meal. It thinks about your errands. It thinks about what you want, what you did, how you feel about what you did, how you feel about what you want, how discouraged you are about what you want, or how in fantasy, la-la land, you are about what you want. Your mind loves to glom, to hitch onto fantasy. Loves fantasy. Because when you're in fantasy, you're, in a sense, numb to the present. You're not very present at all. You're off. You're out of body, in a way. It is an escape. It is the favorite escape of human beings, or fantasies. If you have a one-time fantasy, and after that, you begin to actually plan what you're going to do, that fantasy will turn from a fantasy into an action, into a strategy. It can become realized. But if you keep going back to the fantasy, the someday that this we can do this, and someday I'll do that, and someday this will happen, you can get lost, blissfully so, in a kind of limited two-dimensional sort of way, or maybe even one-dimensional sort of way, because it won't even be on paper. It'll be just all in your mind, and there'll be this wonderful place where everything will be okay, and then it's done, and then you just sit there in the bliss, and okay, yeah, got it. In these voices that you hear in your mind, they come from different parts of you. If you were to take your psyche and split it up into sections, you would find that the different personalities that you've been throughout your life, the different persona, the different identities that you have had, all will come in their own way to speak to you. Certain situations will trigger the response by certain identities. For example, if when you were a child, you experienced quite a bit of feeling powerless and overwhelmed. Any time a situation in your adult life comes around in which you could potentially feel powerless and overwhelmed, you can slip right into the identity, the thoughts and feelings, of the child you. We call that shrinking. We've talked about this before, where you shrink back into a prior, smaller, more immature self. Whoever it was that first addressed the feeling or the state or the pattern that you are experiencing is the one that you normally say, okay, it's your pattern, you started it, you get to keep dealing with it. As if that self has any new inspiration whatsoever. But it results in the abandonment of your current you, of the powerful you that you are in the moment, in the present, because indeed it is only in the present that you have power. And as soon as you let a prior self, a prior identity, take over, you're out of power. You will get depleted. You will feel drained. You will get tired. There will be conflicts within you that seem to be unresolvable. Now, we have spoken before of different internal identities or personalities, but we're going to go through them briefly again as a reminder to you that these are the ones that you have as your primary favorites. You have others, but these are your primary favorites. And then you have a smattering of archetypal identities that you have toyed with and played with and hoped that you were at some time in your past. It can be in your past as of last week. It doesn't have to be in your distant past or in your childhood. Any past will do sometimes. It depends on when you encounter a particular pattern or circumstance or situation. As we just brought up, the child self, very primal, your first introduction to all your emotions was done as a child. So anytime you have some kind of emotional trigger, if you haven't deliberately processed and learned to work with and manage your emotional body, when an emotional situation, when any kind of emotional intensity shows up, very likely you'll slip right back into your child persona. And you will feel, oh my gosh, I'm emotional, I'm going out of control, what do I do now? I'm starting to feel overwhelmed. But that's the way the child responds. The child doesn't know how to respond except perhaps by hiding or some kind of compensation strategy. Not very sophisticated. Your child self will show up anytime you have a need to feel secure and safe. Children have a tendency to feel very unsafe. Well, it is kind of strange when you're about 2 or 3 when you suddenly realize to your chagrin that you and your mother, you and your parents, you are a separate individual. There's separation. Oh my, separation, it's painful, it's scary. I don't understand this distinction, but I'm not that. What do I do now? And the world is so unknown. So moving out into the unknown just to explore can feel pretty strange. And all of you have had parents who felt unsafe themselves. And you've heard warnings, oh no, don't do that, you could hurt yourself. That kind of message, and you had to acknowledge, hey, you know, the parents know something. You thought there were gods when you were very, very small. They seem to be in charge of everything. They seem to know everything. If they think the world is unsafe, then it must be. It must be a big, scary, unknown place. So when you feel those kinds of feelings, you want safety and security. You want to hide in your living space and triple and quadruple the locks on the door and the windows be locked and lock yourself in and try to feel secure from all those burglars out there. It doesn't help that the local news will have all sorts of horrendous crime reports. You know, drive-by shootings, random burglaries, disasters of various sorts. Could happen any moment, any moment. Your desire to feel secure, to be protected, is a child desire. And when that comes up, any type of circumstance that threatens your sense of security, it is tempting, oh so tempting, to step outside the adult that you are right now and right back into that inner child. The corollary to the inner child, the one that you integrate inside and internalize within you to form what is normally known as your conscience, where you begin to take upon yourself the moral imperatives and choices of your culture, of your parents, of your religion, or whatever. And when you take that upon yourself, then within yourself, you have this internal authority who speaks to you and tells you what you should do. That is the internalized parent It is the corollary to the internalized child self. Yes, you've heard about your inner child. There is an inner parent as well. That's the one that makes you feel guilty if you haven't been nice, if you say no. Makes you scared if somehow or another it looks like you're not going to be safe, and it's going to tell you, you better go and hide, you better put up your defenses, or you better do something. Better lock all the doors. You're cold. Go put your coat on. You're sick. Go lie down. There's some good things that the internal parent does too. But the internal parent can also, if your own parents had any sense of judgment about you, or you were in the family known to be the crazy one or the odd one or the ditzy one, the smart one, the slow one, whatever your name was, whatever it is, your kind of place in the family. Your internal parent keeps you there. It'll make sure you stay there, and that identity does not expand. It will judge you, and it's harsh. It will judge your performance very carefully to make sure you don't make any mistakes. It will tell you the protocol of what you're supposed to be doing and when. It's kind of your organizer. But it'll also severely evaluate your performance to determine whether you did a good job or not. And if you didn't do a good job, boy, are you going to feel bad. You disappointed your internal parent. You'll feel disappointed in yourself. You'll push yourself to be more precise. You'll feel guilty and you'll stew in your guilt and feel sorry for yourself. The guilt comes from your internal parent. The internal parent and the internal child have a dialogue going on in your mind all day long. So if they're not getting along too well, you're not very happy. You've got the whiny child, and then you've got the judging parent. If you've got a conflict in there, it shows itself through a lot of disturbed emotions. You feel unhappy. Your solar plexus feels twisted and uncomfortable. But this is only part of the time. You do spend some of your life actually an adult. Hopefully, the majority of it. But you can catch the inner voices of the child and the parent going through. The inner child, needy, dependent, the internal parent, analyzing and saying, well, this is the way it should be. This is the protocol. This is what you should be doing. You should go back to school and get your degree. You should live up to your potential, says the internal parent. If you give those kind of messages to yourself, you're not an adult. You're flipping and flopping back and forth between the child and the parent, the child resisting, passive resistance to the internal parent. If you had a parent that was very dominating, very controlling, and when you were a child, you learned how to be in total passive resistance, you're going to find yourself at times in your adult life being in total passive resistance to your internal parent, all by yourself. You don't even have to have anything externally going on. This is a dynamic that drives most people. If you had an idea about what a relationship should be when you were a kid, and you get into a relationship as an adult, you could very easily fall in the child position and make your partner the parent. You'll project onto somebody else so that you can continue the patterns, continue the games. Or you'll become the parent, and try to fix the other person, the child. This never works. You never can control the other person. And a parent and a child don't make good romantic partners. It pretty much kills the relationship. If you do that at work, it'll kill your job. If you make your boss your parent, you'll act like a child around your boss. If you're the boss, you can see your employees as your children. And you feel like you have to tell them what to do, supervise them, and criticize them. That's your job, to make them do it just right. It can create all sorts of headaches in any area of your life. But you do grow beyond your childhood. You do grow into adolescence. And when you grow into adolescence, you take on your adolescent identity. The adolescent identity is kind of rebellious, kind of resistant to authority. Always, though, looks for peers, looks for others to validate you, to tell you how great you are, how important you are, how smart you are, how good you are. Needy of that feedback, needy for positive feedback. If you get critical feedback and you collapse, you go right back into child. But if you get positive feedback, it kind of helps you as the inner adolescent you to improve your social standing. Or at least that's the idea. Now, the inner adolescent doesn't really like to do anything unless they get really excited about a project. But nothing necessarily that's practical. It's much more imaginative, or it's much more creative that the internal adolescent would like to get into. Or it would be much more about getting recognized by your peers. Anytime you have voices in your mind and talk about that, talk about what do they think about me, what are they saying about me, what's going on behind my back, you're tapping into your adolescent voice. Now, the adolescent voice, just like the child, has its corollary. And its corollary is also another know-it-all kind of voice. That's your ego. Your ego is the one that compares you to everybody else to determine where you stand in the pecking order, to determine where you stand in any kind of hierarchy or any kind of collective. Of course, an adolescent wants to stand out, but at the same time doesn't want to be humiliated or embarrassed or pointed out and laughed at. That's the ultimate terror of the adolescent. So it's a dilemma. Anytime you find yourself in a crisis around visibility, you're back in adolescence trying to work out something that didn't get resolved then. But your ego is very sneaky. Your ego is very tricky. And we're going to talk about the negative ego, because this voice in your mind, when your negative ego talks to you, it fools you. It pulls the wool over your eyes. It tells you all sorts of explanations and rationalizations why you don't have to do what other people do. It rationalizes why you stay separate, because you're better than. It rationalizes and makes up all sorts of stories about your circumstances and what you should do. Now, generally the internal parent is the one who tells you what you should do. But the ego will feed you a fantasy about what you should do. A fantasy that most likely you have no real chance of fulfilling. So when you fail, the ego laughs at you, Because the ego itself is the one who pulls the rug out from under you. Okay, whoop, okay. And then gets to tell you, oh, you poor dear, they just didn't really appreciate you. They didn't understand how great you were. It's not your fault. And they'll help you rationalize. I'm your friend. Look, I'm telling you how great you are. You are great. Just nobody else is recognizing it. How noble of you. How independent of you. You, the great loner. They're whispering things about you right now. Don't you want to know what they are? They probably are saying. And here the negative ego will trot out a whole bunch of sample scenarios. And if you're not careful, you'll believe that they actually are happening. And you'll react to those people as if they are spreading gossip about you, even if they aren't. And really mess up your relationships. Really take everything personally. Feel threatened by any social situation. That's adolescence for you. Now, the ego does have a positive function, too. The ego's positive function is to function as your boundary between self and other, to distinguish you from other people, and to allow this boundary to be a translation, a vibration, through your intention in order to manifest stuff and bring stuff to you that you desire. If you have a positive ego, you can manifest all sorts of great things. You can receive tremendously beautiful and wonderful abundance of things. But the negative ego has an investment in your failure. It is your saboteur, the one who sabotages you, the one who pulls the rug out from under you, the one who feeds you the fantasies that you believe over and over and get snagged into. The adolescent is in their fantasy world. The negative ego reinforces it and then gives you a whole bunch of failure to where you think that ego is your only friend. And you'll try again and go for the next level of fantasy that the ego will bring to you. And indeed, fortunately, you do pass through adolescence and enter your young adulthood. And many of you have worked consistently with issues of child, issues of adolescence, have done a lot of work on the internal parent to try to reduce judgments. We have emphasized this over and over. Has tried not to fall into the fantasy trap, or taking things personally, or comparing yourself with others. You've made major strides and headway in this. So you move into the young adult identity. This is the one that the world is opening for. This is the one who heads out into the world and must make his or her own way in it. The young adult is filled with fantasies about what will be. The young adult is very imaginative, very creative, can put together visions and dreams like a snap can do phenomenal brainstorming. Or the young adult can buy into the workaholic theory of success, that if you just apply yourself and push and drive yourself, you'll be successful. Let's make some big deals, really big deals. Let's jump start. Instead of working, starting at the bottom where most young adults start, let's start at the top. Hey, that sounds great. Let's just connect with a whole bunch of people and together we're going to dream a big dream and we're going to make it happen. The young adult marked by big dreams. So if you find that your fantasies get into very large world-based dreams, impact society kind of dreams, you might be getting stuck into a young adult fantasy. If you have resistance to doing the work that is needed to heal yourself, to change, to really get things accomplished in the physical plane? Is your young adult saying, no, I shouldn't have to start at the bottom. I should start somewhere up in the upper middle, to the top. Otherwise, it's not worth my time. I don't want to do it if it's going to be hard and I'm drudgery. And no way, no way. I've finally grown up. I'm finally on my own. I don't want to have to put up with teachers and parents telling me what to do. I want to be free. I don't want any more drudgery. I want to have adventures. And frankly, many people in their 20s do have quite a bit of adventure. That's where they explore. That's where you explore to find out what it is you're interested in. If you're a dabbler, okay, I'm going to do this. And then 2 months later, oh, I'm going to do this. And another month, I'm going to do this other thing. If you keep changing, you're a dabbler. Young adult, a supreme dabbler. Doesn't seem to have the depth, doesn't seem to want the follow through. The follow through is too much hard work. It's so much more fun to dream. And if we can't pull that big deal in, well, we'll just morph all these people into another yet even bigger deal. Yes, that's what we'll do. One of these days, it'll be outstanding what we can manifest. But meanwhile, it tends to physical and it doesn't tend to manifest because a young adult isn't grounded in reality. Doesn't know yet who he or she is, and doesn't know how the world works yet. So one of the things that the young adult, in order to succeed, in order to get into success, the young adult has to have follow through. When the young adult figures this out, he or she will, and thereby install the corollary to the young adult, the slave driver. And the slave driver will be the one that will motivate the young adult to do all the stuff the young adult does not want to do. So if you find yourself lagging and not wanting to do stuff, but you guilt yourself into doing it, you really, really ought to do it. If you don't do it, you're really a bad person. Or if you don't do it, it'll never get done and you'll be a miserable failure. That's a fear option. Guilt and fear, guilt and fear, fear and guilt, fear and guilt. It'll get you up off your butt. Get up off your butt. You'll say to yourself, come on, you have to do it. You have to do it. Push, push, push. Come on, push, drive, crack the whip. Slave driver will make you do it. It'll also exhaust you. You remember that passive resistant child? When the slave driver's on your case, it overwhelms the child. Child goes running back. It's too much. I can't do that. I'm going to go hide under my bed. And you have all the parts of you running amok, not knowing exactly how to coordinate and how to work together, because the adult is gone. The adult is not present. The way to heal this situation, the way to work with your inner voices and all the mind talk and all the negative beliefs and limiting beliefs and all the storyline that you keep repeating over and over and over again, which continues to bring your past selves back into aliveness, into the present, is for you to be the adult. That's a persona as well. That is an identity as well. And that does not have a split. It does not have a corollary. It is a union. It is a union of the positive child, positive parent, positive ego, positive adolescent, positive young adult, and the positive slave driver, which is actually your positive motivation, your passion. When you blend those positives together and you hold a conscious awareness of your power, of your freedom, of your love, of your divine mission, you can stay an adult. The adult doesn't need approval of others, but the adult respects the self and respects others. The adult has compassion and care, but does not sacrifice the self for anyone. Rather becomes an inspiration by example. The adult knows where his or her boundaries are, can say no, can say yes, and really mean it, can make a promise and follow through on it without going into crazy stuff, pressure and resistance and rebellion. The true adult is not rebellious because the true adult is a true authority. You are a true authority for you, who you are, for your life. You are an adult. If you'll claim you're adult, you'll find that your inner voice says, clean up pretty well. If you stay an adult, when you feel an emotion or enter a pattern or find a circumstance happening in your life that's an old familiar pattern from your past, an old refrain, if you will stay an adult and give your children, your child self, your adolescent self, and your young adult self permission to go and be in their fantasy land and their little own world, and you, the adult, you'll deal with it. You will come up with some magic. You can come up with solutions. You can come up with manifestations. You can come up with success. Only the adult who is present and conscious and in his or her power can experience the success, the abundance and prosperity. Now you might say, well, wait a minute, I know some very, very wealthy people and they are totally immature. So what gives? I have to be totally mature before I can make a dime, and these people are running amok, you know, and they're the, you know, the laughing stock, you know. Look out, for example, Donald Trump and his hair, you know. This is not a mature man. But what he did that was right for him was that he loved what he did. And he didn't destroy himself with the slave driver. He was able to be big enough to not take everything personally and crumble when everybody looked at him funny. He took it and he made it a game. He had adult qualities in that regard. And he was able to use them and able to take the opportunity when it presented itself to make money, to create all sorts of interesting realities. Oh yeah, he's not perfect. He'll never will be. He's got failed relationships. He may not know how to treat his wives well or treat people very well at all. But he had enough. He has enough adult characteristics to pull it through. You have that too. You have enough right as it is, right now, of adult characteristics to pull it through. But if you could add that into that adult part, if you will, to that union of selves, the positive selves of your past, into a empowered and positive self of your present, what successes you could do. You did not come here, dear ones, to be the mega billionaires. That wasn't why you came. If that was why you came, if that was part of the plan, you would have certainly noticed it before now. Right? You came because you were called on a spiritual mission. And it's up to you as an adult to clear out all the misconceptions about spirituality that were fed to you as a child, as an adolescent, and as a young adult. That it's not congruent with money, that you must forego the world and desires, that you must be desireless. This has absolutely destroyed the success of many people, beautiful people. from your child. Use your innocence. Meet whatever comes to you in your life, in the present, right head on. Be present with it. Do not prejudge it. Do not make assumptions. Experience a gift from your child self, if you will use it, the positive self, the positive child who can play, who can laugh and giggle and see the humor and everything. You can use the positive parent to take good care of yourself and those that you love. Because you love. Because you love yourself. Because you value you and others, especially dear to you. You will take care of things. You will become competent in what you do to do that. The adolescent, the positive adolescent, the positive adolescent is engaged with life. There's a passion, an enthusiasm, an intensity about life that once you pass into your 20s and onward, seems like you lose that juice. The adolescent had it. Lots of juice. Adolescents generally have a sense of where they're going, even if it's not where they actually end up. You can use that juice, the enthusiasm, not just the sarcasm of the adolescent, which is the reactionary one, the rebellious one, the cynical one, but the impassioned one. Your interest, whatever it is, can be engaging, full, almost an obsession. You will do something with it. You will follow through on it. And your ego can be made positive. You can give your ego the parameters of what you want and it will bring it to you. You don't have to take things personally. You don't have to compare yourself with anyone. You can have a healthy ego to know your boundaries, to know your strengths as well as your weaknesses and be totally cool with both. As an adult, you can utilize your ego powerfully to function in the world. You don't want to get rid of it. We had a client who didn't have an ego, basically scrapped the ego. He could not distinguish between himself and other people. Every person he was with, he became that person. He couldn't have any direction of his own. He had no sense of boundaries. He had no sense of distinction between self and other. He was wandering around in the oneness, but he was lost there and feeling powerless. We had to talk to him, and over a period of several months, we helped him build an ego so he could distinguish himself, so he could create boundaries. And as he turned his life around. So you want an ego. You really need an ego. And the young adult, to be able to dream, to be able to imagine, to have a sense of unique flair that is yours alone, your own unique creativity. And instead of the slave driver, to tap into your true motivation, to your true ambition, that which really you want, what really you desire to be, to do, to experience. And let that move you. Let that motivate you. Let the adult come through. When you integrate this, you'll find much more clearly what it is you came to do. And you can do it. Many of you keep wondering, oh, Galexis, what did I come here for? What's my destiny? What's the purpose of being here? You spiritual beings, the purpose to coming here was to use this world as a reflection to discover and lift and expand the dimensions of you to understand who you are. And then from there, to find a unique channel of action that is yours. Something that you enjoy doing. Something that you can be good at because you enjoy it. Not good at just because you force yourself to. And you don't have to drive yourself by guilt or fear, but by choice. By passion. You can be an adult. And when you are an adult, it's amazing how so many of those inner voices, how so much of that mind talk drops out. How much quieter your mind is. Now, this is one way to go about it. This is the Western way to go about it. You see, years ago, the one who channels us was initiated into an Eastern or mystical path. To do that, she had to meditate anywhere from 1 to 4 hours a day. Sometimes she did more than that. She really got into it. And she could get her mind really clear. She had experiences. She had phenomenal, beautiful, uplifting, outrageous experiences. However, when she was done meditating and she'd come into the world and then she'd have to interact, for example, with a landlord over a little conflict about, you know, something going on in the apartment or whatever. She had no presence of mind. She had no peace in her mind. All the old inner voices came back, crowding in. She'd panic. She'd fall back into child, into adolescence. She wouldn't know what to do. She'd get lost. She'd put her foot in her mouth. She'd feel horrible about whatever she did later and judge herself relentlessly. Why, she wondered, do I go off track so fast? I was in such a high state of bliss in my meditations. Oh yeah, when you're there, the context of it is that you're away from all the world. This is your place of repose, of retreat, of bliss. There was a motive. She had a motivation for it. She did it. She had a passion for it. She did it. She utilized some adult factors. But when it came with dealing with the mundane world, she had no interest in that whatsoever. She didn't grow up there. The Western way is to grow up in the mundane world. The Eastern way was always to escape the mundane world, to disdain it, to go beyond it. Now, it's workable. There are people who can do that, who really are dedicated to their meditations and can maintain that life, but they cannot live as a regular, daily householder, worker person. They can't. They have to go and live in a cave or to get rid of all their possessions and go around with a begging bowl in order to sustain that distinction and separation from those inner voices. That's a big price to pay, and in the West, people don't want to pay it. But the effect is the same. But you can live in the world and have your spiritual cookies too. You just have got to mature. And you came here because this is the next step for your planet, is to step into maturity. That's the spiritual direction the planet is going. It is not going into splitting between the material and the spiritual, where everyone has to deal with less and less and less and less until everybody's living with their little begging bowl in their little hovel. This is not India. That India is not the future. Why is India growing right now? It's because they're imprinting on the West. The integration of West and East is coming. And it'll be represented by the way that you deal with your life, mundane life. The inner voices. If you heal and work with your inner selves so that you can become a unified adult, it will have been equal to many years of meditation. And you get to work in the world. You get to bring in money. You get to enjoy things too. We say it's the best of both worlds. But to get to that place where your mind is absolutely quiet, this is the next step of the adult, and you're not there yet. But it's coming, where you can step into that quiet within as a powerful adult, and through choice, stop the thinking, stop the feeling, stop everything, and transcend. It's coming. But this is the work that you, having been born into the West on a spiritual track, a first waver breaking through into new territory for the planet, has to go through the healing of the inner voices. All right. That was a little bit longer than our usual, because it's a very comprehensive subject, and we actually have done a whole day's workshop on it. And we would recommend that for you to learn how to really work with these individual components, that you would work with that workshop, which takes you in detail on working with each one of them in meditation and processes and so forth. And then we have another one specifically on the adult, which are various processes enabling you to bring these positive aspects of your younger selves into union, into your power, into your present as an adult. That was also a whole day's workshop with wonderful techniques, meditations, and so forth for you to understand what it means to be an adult and understand how to function and act as an adult. So if you need clarity on any of these pieces, these two workshops are excellently set up for that and can truly help you through that learning stage. Now, we're going to go to questions and answers. And if anyone wants to ask a question, please raise your hand and Daniel will give you the microphone. Or are you a little intimidated after all of that, huh?
Hello, Galexis. Thank you very much. That was very inspiring and enlightening. Of the positive aspects of these other voices, these other younger selves, is there any positive aspect to the negative ego, or does that negative ego just sort of fade out or become a part of the positive ego when the present adult, and you know, when we become adults in the present moment, step forward and, you know, allow those things to become positive?
All right. Well, one of the ways that you, in a sense, dissolve the negative part of the negative of the ego, right, is for you to set up the contexts for you to be in choice. When you are in choice, from an adult point of view, and you make a choice, this is how, what you feel, this is what you believe, this is what you think, this is what you choose, this is how you're going to go about it. And the context of all of this together is the context, the thoughts and the feelings and all that type of stuff, that all is kind of a substrate, that's kind of a basic foundation for reality creating. When you make those determinations, when you make the call on those details, the negative ego cannot do a thing. They cannot function. Only the positive ego can function when you are in choice. Now, most people, the negative egos, are able to seduce them so much that they give away their power to the negative ego. They believe everything it says. And therefore, they don't set up the context. They don't set up the belief structures. They don't set up the thoughts and the feelings that are appropriately adult for those circumstances. So the negative ego will have free rein for whatever circumstances have not been reframed or have not been repatterned through choice. Now, you don't have to be perfect either through your choices. You just have to understand what the context of your choices are. What, when you make a certain choice, what you're going to think, what you're going to feel, what are the features that you're going to experience of that choice, that come from that choice that you're making, or come from that approach, or come from that self or identity. If you fall back into your old story and you go unconscious and let your mind just da-da-da-da-da all day long, and you have a pretty well-developed negative ego, it's not going to shrink at all. If you find your ego tripping you up, by giving you a fantasy, giving you condolences that you weren't appreciated good enough by other people, you can recognize, oh, this is that little sleazy one. This is the one who's going to kind of cozy up to me and say, I'm your buddy. Ha, 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 let me feed you a fantasy. Now, you don't know it's a fantasy when they feed it, but it feels really good for the moment. And you go for it. If you can catch it at that time, if you can catch it with your awareness, you can say, ego, no. It's almost like having a dog. Down, Rover. Okay? No, ego, no. And you just see that little mischievous ogre that the ego is, and you just shrink it down. You just see it go, and now it's about an inch tall, going, no, no, they're against you, they're against you. Really, 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 you need to be paranoid. Or whatever it is that they're going to say. And we made an example about paranoia. Probably the biggest ego trip is paranoia. Because the people, I'm so important, the dark forces are after me. Right? So the ego has a wide range. But once you start to understand what your ego is saying and how it trips you up, it doesn't have all that much creativity. It will do the same little trips. There's always the place where you trip yourself up. It's the same place over and over again, and the ego is always the one doing it. Once you catch it, you say, no, I refuse, stop it. That's it, no. But you have to take your power back. You have to take your power back from the child, from the parent, from the adolescent, from the ego, and from the young adult and the slave driver. You always have to take your power back and step into the adult. And as soon as you do so, the ego becomes powerless. The ego then will have to do, the positive ego, basically as a servant, will do things for you to sustain, support, and, your borders, your boundaries, and allow you to receive stuff, to translate stuff through that boundary from the other into self, so that you can receive stuff. Does that make sense, Joe?
Yes, it does.
Yes, all right, good.
Thank you.
That's a very good question. Thank you. All right, who else?
Hi, Alexis.
Hello.
I believe one thing you mentioned, well, I have to say it's very interesting that I feel like I live in all these different places and probably not very often in my adult. And so it's almost disheartening to realize that. But one thing you said is if you are able to make choices, then the negative ego dissolves.
Mm-hmm.
What about if you cannot, what if you're confused and you can't make choices?
All right. Well, which one of yourselves do you think is the confused one? Which part of your life did you feel most confused? Childhood, adolescence, 20s, early 20s?
That's a tough question. I'm going to say adolescence.
All right. That was a game plan for your adolescence. That was one of the compensating strategies. Oh, there's so many things to decide. There's so many feelings I have going on simultaneously. I can't choose between all these different feelings, and I can't sort it out, because if I do sort it out and actually make a choice, I'll probably get into trouble for it. Right? Think about it. If you nailed down a choice and said, this is what I choose, and you're an adolescent and you don't have any power, so what happens, you know? You're going to get challenged, aren't you? If you have tremendous clarity and you don't have support from your family for whatever it is that you're choosing, and they're not behind you 100% for whatever it is that you're choosing,